Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Hello.
Welcome. And seven. And my.
I would love to start with the content for today. With a little bit of a framework of what we're going to do. We're going to start talking about some of the core beliefs for our approach and try to understand what's really behind an emotional moment and what's really going on in there. And then Roman's going to tell us the tools that apply from our view to all this item of tantrums. And then we're going to share some anecdotes of how this looks in, or how it has looked in our personal lives with our own children. And then at the end, we're going to have some time, as I mentioned before, for question and answers. But so I would love to start with the content, actual content of the call. And I would like to start by sharing one of the main ideas, the core of our approach, is the concept of connection. We actually call our approach Parenting by Connection. And it sort of goes like this. So our children need to feel connected to us. We're social beings, and that's just a fact. We are designed to be connected with each other. So by connection, what we mean is that sense of there's someone here that cares, so I'm safe. This is what a connected child would feel. There's someone here that cares, so I'm safe. And this sense of connection is so vital that our brains are actually dependent on it to grow and thrive as much as they need food or clean air or a good night's sleep. So when this sense of connection is there, our children's brains hum with excitement. They grow, and that's when you see the kids being flexible, engaged, being cooperative, sharing really well, even as toddlers, relaxed, enjoying life fully, playing relaxedly. But then what happens when that sense of connection breaks? And it does every single day in every single family, like when we go to sleep, when we go to school, or when we're really little and mommy goes on the phone. I'm sure you can relate to that. We're playing with them and the phone rings and, wow, that connection breaks and they let us know. So what happens then? The big feelings come up when that connection breaks. So what's behind that emotional moment? What's really going on? So to put it simply, an emotional moment is just feelings that have accumulated and need to be expressed. That is what an emotional moment is. So our bodies, being mammals after all, we receive input from the environment and from the experiences we go through, and some of them are hard to digest emotionally, so don't sit well in our system. So these feelings don't just evaporate. They stay. And they start bothering us. They're like a little pebble in our shoe. Like we're trying to walk and there's something in our shoe. So managing those unpleasant feelings takes a lot of effort and brain power. So when they accumulate, they inhibit our rational thinking. So we become irrational. We do irrational things. And these feelings are driving the show. They make us do irrational things. So I hope that makes sense so far. So just as we get rid of what we don't need on a digestive level, our bodies naturally seek ways to release those feelings, those little pebbles in our shoe, so that we can regain access to our center and walk straight again, right? So the emotional release mechanism that we have is inborn, is marvelous. But for centuries, society has told us to avoid it, to stop it, to distract, to shut it down, to ignore, and it has put this big fat label of not healthy to this emotional release mechanism. So this is what a tantrum is like. This is what it is. It's an emotional release mechanism meant to help us get rid of the feelings that are bothering us. On top of that, I think it's relevant to mention that it's hard to be a kid. It really is, because we're often as kids in the powerless role. Like the world is meant to be functioning for adults, so we're often being told what to do. We're like dragged around. We don't have choices. There's so many things we would like to do we can't do just yet. So those feelings turn up really, really easily, and they accumulate. Another key piece to mention, I think, is that kids often pin big emotions to small things. That's what my daughter was trying to do when she was two, and I was completely misreading the signal. This is what we do because sometimes maybe big things happen in life. I don't know, somebody died, somebody moved, my parents got divorced. These big feelings, the kid, sometimes it's so hard to like look at them directly, and I don't even know sometimes as a kid why I'm getting mad, but I can surely get mad about not having the blue cup when I really wanted the blue cup. So it's easy for me to pin big feelings into small things. So it's not really about the blue cup. It's not really about the little thing, but it's a good pretext that the kid is using so that he or she can work on the emotional content that's behind it. So they pin big feelings to small things. This is normal. This is universal. And if your kid is doing it, he's right doing it just as like every single kid on planet Earth is doing. So nothing wrong with that. But we tend to read that as like, oh my God, they're just irrational, and how can they get so mad about this little thing? So it's good to keep in mind that it's just easier for them to manage. Like, I can really get mad at this little thing. So it's also important to mention that they signal their lost sense of connection with off-track behavior. So that's why it's so hard for us. It rarely makes sense. It's like, oh my God, they're having this massive tantrum because of this little thing. And also, they're like being impossible. So it doesn't make sense to us unless we understand what's going on. So just to recap briefly, we have a recover mechanism. It's an emotion release process, and there's two main ideas. Feelings accumulate. That's a fact of life. And these very feelings cause challenging behaviors. Those behaviors are so annoying, so difficult, or all those quirky things, all that aggression, all that difficulty sleeping or sharing, you name it, all that whining, that's caused by feelings that are accumulated. So when we help them, our kids, get rid of these feelings, behaviors naturally go back on track. Just like we were talking about the shoe, it's like removing those pebbles from their shoe. So then instead of like shaming the kid for walking funny or forcing the kid to just like ignore it, like the pebble is still there. If we go deeper and remove that pebble, then they can just walk straight freely. So the thing is that for that to happen, for that mechanism and that beautiful process to happen, our children need to feel there, close to them, and available. So then I would love to hear from Roma, like, what does this look like for in the frame of our approach and one of our wonderful tools?
Thank you. I love how beautifully and clearly you explained that. I feel like I understand it better now.
Thank you. Yeah, they say you teach what you need to learn, right? That's why it worked for me. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best thing. So funnily enough, we have a tool for exactly this. It's one that we call Stay Listening. And stay listening is where you stay close and you listen for the duration of the upset. I'm going to describe a bit more about what that actually means and what it looks like and things you might say. Essentially, what you're offering with stay listening is anchoring through the storm that your child is in and needs to be in. You're like their safe harbor that is absolutely certain that they're okay and is unshaken by the intensity of the emotion that they're feeling. So usually moving close is helpful. Get down on their level or make some bodily contact or eye contact. Some children will move away from you when they're upset, so you want to follow them. And they might shout even, go away, go away. My daughter actually uses go away. You talked about pretext, like the blue cup. My daughter uses go away as her pretext. If she needs to get feelings up, she'll just start saying go away, even if I'm in the next room. So I know that it's not that she really wants me to go away, and that if I stay close, it allows her to feel the feelings more fully. And if I move away, sometimes she'll just find a way to distract herself from the feelings, but I can see that they're still bubbling underneath the surface. So we recommend to stay with them, even if they are saying that they want you to go away. And it's not really what they mean, it's what their emotions are saying, rather than what they would say if they were kind of calm and thinking clearly. Before I say things that you might do, I might say a couple of things that you maybe would avoid. So one thing is any sense of kind of panic or urgency or trying to fix or reassure. So you don't want to listen in a kind of tense way, saying, yes, I know you're upset, yes. Or you don't want to say, okay, all right, we'll go to the shop and we'll get you another one. You just want to really allow the feelings that are coming up, allow the upset. And yes, you might find solutions later on, but for now, the feelings are more important than the solutions. And you also want to avoid labeling feelings. So it's quite popular to say things like, I see you're really angry, or I think that makes you sad. And we would actually suggest to avoid saying the feeling, because what we're trying to do here is help your child stay in their emotional experience. And when we label feelings, it can kind of jolt them out of that, and they start thinking about, oh, am I angry? Is it okay to be angry? And they're no longer in this kind of bodily releasing process that Marilupe just described. So there's kind of four different kinds of things that you might say during stay listening. General reassuring phrases like, I'm right here, you're safe, we're in your bedroom, daddy's downstairs, or you've got this, I'm with you, I know that you're okay, I'm right here is a good one. I'm not going anywhere. There's nowhere else more important that I need to be right now. And then the other things that you, so that's the first thing, just sort of general sort of safety and reassurance and helping them feel your connection. And then the second type of phrases that you might say, you could, you're just basically outlining the upset. You're drawing their attention back to what seems to be their current upset. So if they're using a pretext, you're just going to keep saying, you wanted the blue cup. Or it might be, you dropped your ice cream. Or you missed daddy. And you just keep saying that thing over and over again. And then the third type of thing you might say would be holding a limit, maintaining a limit. So you might say, I'm not going to get you your favorite pink cup. You'll do just fine with the blue one. I think you can use this cup. I'm not going to get you another one. You'll do just fine with this cup. I think you can still enjoy your drink. That kind of thing. And then the third type of phrase would be a sort of, sorry, was that the third one? The fourth type of phrase would be something hopeful that opposes the feelings that they're expressing. So when they're saying, they're expressing that something is really terrible, really scary, or really unsafe, or unfair, or not how they want it to be, you're just going to throw in a sort of calm, vaguely hopeful statement to show the opposite. And just to distinguish this from, you're not reassuring them out of their feelings, but you're actually just offering the opportunity for them to feel what they feel even more fully. So actually, when I said, I think you'll still enjoy this blue cup, they're going to feel the absolute opposite of that. I can't possibly enjoy the blue cup. I'm never going to use the blue cup. It allows them to feel that even more passionately when we say that. You might say things like, Daddy will come home soon, or we'll get another one later, or you'll get another turn. Something that opposes their kind of urgency and despair in this moment. And what else did I want to say? Just that stay listening is actually one of the most cutting edge therapeutic parenting tools that you can use to heal from within your own family. And there's just such a tremendous power in that. But I think this particular tool is excuse me, one of the most unique and inspiring. And we were just going to give you a whole heap of examples of what stay listening can look like, because it can really look like so many different things. So do you want to jump in with one, Loops?
Sure. So I love how you describe what to say. And, of course, all those things you mentioned, I've seen them spark even more upset, which is actually a good thing, because after the big storm passes, you get a really sweet, calm child who can cope with it, because they got rid of what was bothering them. So I could just imagine saying the exact same things you were mentioning to my kids, and they would be even more upset. So we're actually like, welcoming that big storm, right? And it passes. That's a good thing to hear. Like, it does pass. It looks like it's never going to end. But on the other side, you get a kid who's like, oh, back to themselves and ready to use that blue cup, right? So I have some examples. Some of them are short and sweet about, like, things that just happened. Sometimes the feelings are just from what happened. Sometimes feelings they work on in tantrums are from way back. And so they've been accumulated for years. But so this example I have is very sweet and short. It was Halloween, not this Halloween, but a couple of years ago when we're here in the United States. So we had carved the pumpkins and we were very pleased with them. We put them out a couple of days before Halloween, and there was a possum that came and ate them. So I did just, of course, my daughter, when she came out and she saw them, she was out of her soul. She started crying immediately, had a massive tantrum, very agitated. And I said, just what you mentioned, I just put my finger right where it hurt. And I said, oh, yeah, it ate the face. Look at it. Instead of, like, trying to fix it, getting another one, making another one, I just stayed with it. And I said, yeah, the pumpkin is ruined. Yeah, you worked so hard at it. And she cried more and more and more for, like, 5-10 minutes.
Oh.
And then she was done. She was like, okay. She wiped her own tears, and she came up with her own solution. She's like, next year, we're going to put our pumpkins out on the very day of Halloween so nobody can ruin them. And she was like, ah, off to play, like nothing had happened. So that's a sweet one. And it's like clearly related to something that had just happened. But I've used this tool to help them with before swimming classes. They were terrified, and they were actually telling me, Mommy, don't let me quit. I really want to learn, but I just need to cry. So they had massive, massive amounts of crying and canceling, and then they were ready. Or on the first day of school in a new school, my daughter was terrified because she had just fallen off the bike the day before. She had a pretty nasty, nasty bruise. And she didn't know if she was ready. So right before going to school, she had a massive tantrum. And then she told me, like, Mommy, I'm ready. Like, really, I'm ready. And she walked in, like chin up and so happy. And very recently, she had a massive, she's almost 9, but she still uses this process very, very well. And she knows when and how and with whom. And she uses my attention to do this, and I welcome that whenever I can. So she had a massive tantrum on a Saturday morning. Then she had a Taekwondo class that she loved, and the instructors were like, whoa, she was so great today. Like, we don't know. She was on, she was sharp, she was she was just like wonderful today. I'm like, yeah, I know. She used my attention really well. She got whatever needed to get out. She did, and then she had a fabulous day. And I've also worked with homework issues, like something like resistance to homework after a big cry. She's like super eager to tackle the hard things. So I wanted to mention here that sometimes the brain power that we were using to keep those feelings in play, once the feelings are out, now we can use that brain power for something better. Like we've seen that with in many different cases. Some kids actually have like developmental leaps, and like toddlers start to talk, and then difficult things are mastered. But it's just, we just needed to get that out of our system. So those are some of my examples, but I would love to hear some of yours. I'm sure you have many.
Gorgeous. Thank you. Yeah, I have an example from just now, actually. So my daughter was really off track for quite a couple of hours, actually, after being traveling all day yesterday. We had a very stressful day, and they traveled for hours and hours, like, I don't know, 18 hours, something like that. And not very much sleep, not very much food. And they held it together beautifully. But then today, of course, she was really off track. And we had a gorgeous day. And then as the day wore on, she just couldn't hold it together anymore. And the feelings had to come out somewhere. So we went to this restaurant. And it was surrounded by absolutely gorgeous staff who were just being so kind and playing with them. And there was, you know, fun things and games. And we ordered all this food that she would love normally. And she was refusing to sit down or eat anything or even drink. She asked for a really obscure drink, and they even had it. And then when they brought it, she just refused. She was like, no, that's not it. And so I went over, and I actually set a little limit to help her get to the feelings. I just said, sweetheart, we're going to sit down now. No, I'm not sitting down. I kept patting her, I'm going to sit down now, over and over again. And then she was crying and crying that she hated it, and she wouldn't eat the food, and it was yucky. And I just listened, and then eventually she just sat down and had a little taste of the drink and decided she wanted something different, and then started eating all different things from the table quite happily, and was just sweet and cooperative for the rest of the evening. And yeah, so many examples. There was a time where my son was going through a really fearful stage and just really tense all the time, and we were with another family and we were going to take a bunch of kids to the park. So I said, come on, we're going to go to the park, and everybody else was getting ready and going on, and he was refusing to put his shoes on. I just kept saying, come on, we're going to the park. And he was like, no, not going, not putting my shoes on, can't make me, not going. And I just noticed that as he, because obviously he's 9, so he doesn't do tantrums in the same way that he used to, but he just had to keep venting. I'm not going, I won't put my shoes on, stupid park, I'm not going to the park, I don't like it. And I noticed that as he was venting, he was gradually taking small steps one by one to putting his shoes on, moving towards the door, still venting, I'm not going, you can't make me, I won't go, it's my body, I get to choose. And just as he was saying all this stuff, I'd watch him making progress towards the park.
Wow.
And of course he had a great time. I could share loads more examples, but maybe let's keep pressing on with what we wanted to say.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a tool we use at home regularly. And now I can say that tying it back to the title of our Congress today, tantrums are good for family life. I'm a firm believer in that, because what they do is that tantrums scrub the system, and as Patty would say, she loves that word, scrubbing. They scrub the system and they expel for good and for real emotional residue of hard experiences. Some are simple, some massively big, some recent, some from the past. It doesn't really matter what they're working on at the moment. We have the same response. We anchor them, as Roma was beautifully describing. So then what happens is children can break free from them. And, of course, they function better. So they come to the other side with a relaxed muscle tone. They are more resilient, more adventurous, and they can put that brain power for better use. So, and it also actually makes our day easier because after the tantrum, the kid is cooperating, is sweet, is delightful and relaxed. So now actually I say that tantrum days are good days instead of bad days like before. So when we were getting ready for this call, we read an email from a mom who was asking, how do you define a tantrum in a positive light? So we were having fun coming up with ideas. So would you like to share that? Well, like what we came up with,
yeah,
all the ways of reframing tantrums.
We were on a really scary ride in a water park today, and one of the rides was called like the tantrum run or something like that. So it's a word that really conjures up like, you know, something scary and chaotic and, you know. Here are some other terms that you could use instead of tantrums if you don't like that word. You could start with healthy expression.
You want to go say all the lists? Yeah, you can go and say all the lists.
Okay.
You like.
healthy expression, emotional poop, a free session, a free therapy session, offloading, clearing your mind, a recovery process, healing, a brain upgrade, regulation, reorganizing, coming back to center, mental scrubbing, preparation, emotional hygiene, or a cleanse.
So this, of course, is not easy. I mean, it's simple. We just stay and listen and welcome those big feelings because they're meant to be out of our system. So this is simple in theory, but not really easy. So we do need support. Of course, we do need support. And there are other tools that we suggest and that we promote. And one of them is the listening partnership, which is actually how I met beautiful Roma. She has been my listening partner for over 3 years. And we have grown so much because we support each other. We have our own little space away from the kids to vent and to take our own little pebbles out of our shoes so that we can function better and come refreshed and ready to stay listened. So there is a class on how to get a listening partnership. There's different ways in our website. So I don't know if we have time to explain a lot more about that, but maybe just mention how vital it is, because all these tools are wonderful, but the main tool that makes them all happen is being supported. This is like putting the oxygen mask on first. Like when we get time to do our own emotional scrubbing, then we can go out and listen to our kids. So it's just a brief encouragement to all the parents here to find out about what this tool can do for them. So it's the journey that we've had together has been just tremendous. We've grown and we've found our voices and moved forward in life because we've been supporting each other. And, of course, deepens our friendship. So I'm so glad to be here with you today.
Yeah, I've got so much from listening partnerships with this gorgeous woman, partly because I have a space in my life where I feel absolute unconditional care, and that she just knows that I'm good and I'm doing my best. And the other aspect of it is that each time I get to listen to her, I'm so inspired by how she thinks and how she leads her family that it inspires me to be a better person. So I really can't recommend listening partnerships enough. I feel like our ability to stay listen is directly proportional to how much listening we receive from other adults. So
Yeah, we are almost at the end of our time. So
freezing here.
Yeah, so I guess we have time for maybe one or two questions before our closing. So we would love to hear if you have a question, you can press star 2 to raise your hand, and I can see, I see somebody already raising their hand. So I'm going to unmute you, someone from Baltimore.
Yeah, hi, my name is Maria, and hi. I have a two-year-old and a two-month-old who are just getting into tantrums thanks to the new arrival. And I wonder about stay listening when you also have a screaming two-month-old. Do you just stay listen with the crying baby, and or do you have another recommendation?
Thank you for that question. Roma, would you want to answer, or should I get it?
So, yeah, somebody else actually emailed in about this, so I'm glad you asked. Thank you. And, this sounds like a really normal situation with a new baby. It can bring up such big feelings of, you know, am I still going to be loved? And is there enough attention to go around? And am I still safe? Is this really dangerous competition here? And so it's wonderful that you can offer that kind of attention. And of course, when you've got a tiny baby screaming as well, that can feel quite overwhelming. And it happens less and less frequently as they get bigger. But what I found is the best thing to do in those moments of intensity where both of them are crying is just to scoop one into one arm and scoop the other into one arm and literally just hold them both and turn to one and say some of the phrases that we talked about earlier, you know, I'm right here, or that was really hard for you, or you wanted that thing. And then you turn to the other one and you listen, I'm here with you, you know, I'm sorry this is so hard, you see you're really upset. And then you turn back to the other one, and it's like, you know, even if the crying has been caused by a conflict between the two of them, which maybe hasn't started to happen yet, hopefully at this young stage, but something that can tend to happen with two is that, you know, nobody's wrong. There's no, you know, you're not using your attention to try and work out who's right and wrong and who needs to have, you know, any consequence or anything like that, but just literally, this is how it was for you. And this is how it was for you. And it's quite possible for them to feel your attention, even divided. Excuse me. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I see somebody else, Debbie. I'm unmuting you. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you well.
Hi. I actually have done a hand-in-hand 7-week parenting class last winter. I have a 3.5-year-old, almost 4-year-old daughter, and a 2-year-old son. And so they're both very much in that stage. The 2-year-old kind of just getting there, but the 3.5-year-old is full on in the tantrum, very big emotion stage. And my question's similar to the last one, but the 3.5-year-old is very, very strong-willed and very, she can be very aggressive with her brother. So this is a specific example where I have a really hard time stay listening with her when in my head I feel like disciplinary action is like required. So an example is that she literally bit my 2-year-old in the eye. And so he's in need of attention because he now has this giant welt on his eye and he's bawling and, So I feel like I need to first go to him because he's the one that's been pain inflicted on him. And, you know, I normally, my response to her is like, you need to go to your room and just cool down. And she responds to that, which I didn't think happened until you were 15, but with running to her room and slamming the door and then literally just like kicking the door, like she's going to kick the door down. And, you know, it's really hard for me in those situations to stay and listen with her because, you know, you almost have this primal reaction when your child, you know, hurts your other child. So I'm really struggling with that because usually if she does do something, then she runs and I can't really be with her and stay and listen because usually it's that she's done something aggressive to the younger one.
So, I guess you said so many wonderful things here, and I'm sorry it's so hard. So I've been in those shoes because one of my daughters can be really aggressive. So one of the key things for us to remember is our job as we stay listen is also to be the safety manager and to keep the belief that they really don't want to hurt, they don't want to damage property, they really don't. So they're caught up in this bad moment. And it looks like they do. It looks like they want to be aggressive. So the thing for us is to try to prevent that, like the hits from getting to the target or that bite. So we're right there. We can use our bodies physically to stop the off-track behavior and to try to prevent that little fist from hitting or that little mouth from biting. So the idea also to remember is that they are good and they are trying their best. So it might look like they don't care or that they're, but like an aggressive child is always, always, always an afraid child. There's always fear behind the aggression. So I guess the main thing is to try to do the best that you can. It's not going to be perfect. It's going to be messy. Sometimes you listen to one, but the other one needs listening too. And sometimes you can listen to the quote-unquote aggressor first or the victim first, but it both means listening. Sometimes it happens at the same time because their little systems are like, yay, mommy's here. Let me, like, use her attention. I need some scrubbing to do. Here it comes. Like, it's sort of, like, contagious and beneficial if it's, you have more than one child screaming at the same time. But, of course, we need support. Like, you just said it beautifully. Like, I just can't stay listen in like calmly when they're like that. So the main ingredient here is to be listened to. If you find a listening partner, you could go there and express your frustration and go deep on how hard it is and how you wish things were different. And you can have freedom of the mouth and say things that you would never say in front of your child. And that lessens the burden in our shoulders, so then we are more able to come back next time and listen a little better. But even if it looks messy, the main idea is to let them know that we are here and that we are listening and that we care. And if they slam the door, you can say, I'm right here. And if they try to hit, you say, I can't let you do that. But try to stay close, because even though she might have a face of I don't care and I'm an aggressor and I won't hurt, she's hurting inside. So it's just something to keep in mind, but I'm sorry it's so hard, and we've been in those stages as well.
And do you
I
mean, I guess my question too on that is, do you address with her? Is the only consequence that you're connecting with her through stay listening, or is it, I mean, or is there or
yes,
are
we don't,
you
we don't recommend we don't so when So we're not recommending any sort of like punishment or consequence, because we're seeing that the child is caught up in an emotional moment. So in that, after the storm has passed, we've seen many, many times that they can access their true feelings toward their sibling, and then they say sorry from a generous place, from genuine caring. So they say, like, once my daughter scratched me when in the middle of an aggressive emotional episode, but because this was a mammalian response, not because she wanted to hurt me. And at the end, she was like, Mommy, what happened to you? I'm so sorry. She was literally like, I didn't have to teach her a lesson. So Patty says this beautiful thing about when the child is having this emotional moment, you don't have to teach. You just have to reach. You don't need to address it with consequences of punishment or shaming or separation, because we're seeing this as a different, completely different view. It's like, the child needs me and I'm right here. And then after the storm, if we need to address something like, hey, this happened, you can, but not in the emotional moment. So I don't know if that that helps.
Okay, thank you.
So, thank you. So, I see another hand raised, but unfortunately we can't access the question right now because we are at the end of our time and we do need to close. But I would encourage, I think somebody from Ann Arbor, like, please email us and we're going to say our emails soon so that please that question. We would love to hear it. It's just we can't hear it now, but please email us and we will be able to get back to you because your question is truly important. But we do need to close because, believe it or not, we are at the end of our hour. So, Roma, would you like to tell us what's going to happen next year with you and how people can contact you and how to reach you?
Thanks, lovely. So I have a couple of courses. If you want to do more with me, you can join what I've been calling the Listening School, which is a 6-week online call. Starts actually on Sunday at 9 a.m. GMT for an hour and a half, and it's basically a course that introduces listening partnerships, how to set one up, how to use listening time effectively so that you can increase your patience, think well, lead your family well, and how to listen to your listening partner, what the kind of things you can say to help them. And I've also got an online starter class starting in January. I think it's January the 6th. It will be on the Hand in Hand website. If you want to be in touch with me, my website is birthingabetterworld.co.uk, and you can also find me on Facebook, Roma Norris, Hand in Hand Parenting UK.
Beautiful.
What have you got
so
going
you wanna,
on, love?
Yeah, so if you want to reach me, you can find me on Facebook. Parenting by Connection with Mari Lupe is my page, and there I'm always listing my next events. And you can also email me, Mari Lupe, MariLupe, at handinhandparenting.org. So please email me with your questions. We'll have two starter classes in January, one of them here in Westchester, Pennsylvania, on Thursday morning from January 11 to February 15. So it's a 6-week class Thursday morning. And also in January, Tuesday mornings, I will be going to Maryland. From January 9 to February 13th. So I'm going to be posting all that information, all those details in my website, Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Mari Lupe. So I would love to hear from you, and we would love to, if you have comments or questions, please email us and let us know. And we hope you were inspired today. We hope you're taking some of these ideas and hopefully taking them home. And again, I wanted to thank you, Roma, for inviting me to do this with you, and also thank every single one of the parents who are here and also listening to the recording, because it means a lot to us that you're here, because you're clearly wanting to be the best parent you can be. So thank you, and we thank you for all the hard work you do.
Thank you, Mari Lupe. Gorgeous to be with you for an hour. And if you want to find out more about this approach, I really recommend our gorgeous book, Listen. It's also on audio now. And check out the website, handinhandparenting.org, for articles about any kind of parenting problem. And, thanks for being with us today, and hope you have found that helpful. And, lots of love to all of you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Roma.
All right. Well, I'm going to say goodbye from Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm going to say goodbye from Westchester.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.